8-4 UCLA. Don't you know the UCLA kids have to be very excited to finish 8-4 and that land in the Foster Farms Bowl?
Against a team that's not 500.
Against a team that's maybe one of the worst football teams you'll ever see make a bowl game.
But one of the most unlucky, one of the two.
Military Bowl. Navy, 9-2 against Skate Nate Peterson. Monday, December 28 at 1:30. Skate Nate and Navy.
I'll watch that one.
Tuesday, December 29, Armed Forces Bowl, Fort Worth. Air Force and Cal.
Air Force and Cal, what's the total?
Interesting. Russell Athletic Bowl, Orlando, North Carolina, and Baylor. 4:30 start. Back
good football
to,
game right
that's
there.
A good, that's a very good game.
That's about just about an inch from being a New Year's Day 6 type bowl matchup.
And then we'll jump back to our phones. 865-200-5402. Belk Bowl is going to be NC State, Mississippi Mistake. The Music City Bowl, Texas A&M and Louisville. The Holiday Bowl is going to be Big Ten, Pac-12, who cares? Houston, Florida State, we were talking about before. And then you get into some of those other interesting matchups. That Friday is going to be great guns, man. I love, love, love. The only problem with the playoff system, Bino, fill in the blank, is?
It's those games should always, always be played on New Year's Day, and it should be 8 teams instead of 4.
Yep, should be 4 New Year's Day bowls, and you clear everybody off. In other words, in my perfect world, you don't, and I mean this 1,000%, we don't play on New Year's Day now. You have 4 playoff games New Year's Day, and that's your New Year's Day. That's it. 4 playoff games.
You know, Tony, I'd be perfectly happy with 1 on New Year's Eve and 3 on New Year's Day, but it's what I liked about last year is what the BCS stole from college football is it robbed it of its signature day, which was New Year's Day. It robbed it of that. Last year, they gave it back to us a little bit, and now for several years, it's back on the 31st, which is fine, but I much prefer give us that signature day back. Make those games really, really count.
Back to the phones we go, 865-200-5402. Again, 865-200-5402. Tennessee drawing a team with a lofty ranking out of a weak side of the Big Ten in Northwestern, challenged to score points, had uneven efforts offensively against the 3 teams they could play this year that could play that they played. They beat Stanford earlier in the season, and that ended up being a very costly loss to Stanford, because if it's not for that, we're probably talking about Stanford in, and who's out at that point? Stanford's in and undefeated. And who would have been
out? If you go by the rankings, it would be Oklahoma. And the Big 12 would have been shut out again.
That would have been beautiful. Back to the phones we go. And let's get our next call in. Hello and welcome on your Smart Way Dalton Bearing Hydraulic Tennessee Bowl Special.
Am I on, Tony?
You are. Get right on in here. Hello and welcome.
Oh, Tony, it feels like it was like 6 months ago that we called on this very night last year and was celebrating Jacksonville. This is Doug and Jaxie.
It was a year ago, Doug and Jaxie, and you invited me to come and stay with you and your lovely bride in beautiful Jacksonville. And, Doug, we have since met. We've broken bread. We've become friends. It's unbelievable. You're a wonderful member of the Basilio radio family, unfortunately for you. but, man, how does it feel that we're going to be playing right next door over in Tampa for you, a couple hours away?
Well, it feels good, and you know, this is, I'll give you the fiance story. She goes, oh, by the way, on New Year's Eve, we're going to be in Savannah, Georgia. And I go, excuse me? So, after some gnashing of teeth, and I got to talk to the other couple, the husband, so we've changed our plans. So we will be in Tampa for the game, and we'll be celebrating New Year's Eve in Tampa.
That's called leadership right there, Doug. You took the bull by the horns, and you told your bride, you said, hey, look, I love you, and I'm in there for you, but that's not going to happen.
No, actually, I went rogue, and I went to the husband of the couple that we're going to, and he was able to get on the side, and, you know, so I kind of went around. I wasn't going face-off with her. That wasn't going to work.
Is she?
You should know that.
Is she happy with you on that issue?
She is happy that if the other couple's cool with it, you know, just all of a sudden she's cool with it, but, you know, she would have wanted to whip my tail if it was just her and I. But anyway, bottom line, we'll be in Tampa. So again, like I invited Dino last year too. So both of you guys, you want to come to Jacksonville? We'll all carpool down to Tampa together.
How far of a ride is it from Jacksie to Tampa? I'm thinking that's what, 2 hours and 15 minutes maybe?
It's a little bit closer to three. It's a little bit closer to three. Yeah.
Pretty good ride.
Hours from Jacksie. So we'll leave New Year's Eve night and we'll party it up and we'll hopefully get a win over Northwestern. And I'm thinking Coach Jones is going to make Northwestern seem like they were a couple of plays from playing in the playoffs. So he'll build Northwestern up for us.
Oh, there's not all football coaches do that. By the time he's done with Northwestern, they'll be an absolute world beater of the highest order.
For sure. But I'm gonna get off here, but I'm stoked that we're gonna do it. And we're, you know, and like Vino says, you know, it's disappointing in a way that what could have been. I listened to him talk on ESPN, but you see the growth and you heard the experts talking about, hey, they had these close games, but they got almost everybody coming back next year. So, you know, we can get a win, and then get on a winning streak. And, you know, it all points to beating Florida in September. I'll have a good night, guys.
The level of no excuse for next year. I'm talking about the level of no excuse. Wow.
Sure would be nice to play in Atlanta twice next year, Tony. Because it's the Peach Bowl will host a semifinal game next year. SEC championship game and a semifinal game.
And by the way, as Aaron Woody is saying right now, the ACC refereeing last night at the end of that Clemson game, you don't think they wanted a team in that playoff, do you? Fighting for the national championship, do you? That officiating, when they called that offside penalty, and Herbie, and I tweeted it out because a lot of people thought the game was over, and I was sitting there watching it when it happened. When they went to that replay, and both of those guys were looking at that replay and trying to figure out who was offsides, and then they determined, oh, it was a phantom offside call. Here's my favorite part about it, Vino, the phantom offside. Things that should be replayed and replayable in college football are not. And things that ought not ever be looked at get looked at. So while we're making these games 4+ hours long, like that one last night, a lot of people said, I thought that game was over. I thought that game was over. Because that one started before one of the ones that came to an end. I think it was the Iowa game, and that was like bang bang. What? The Clemson game's still on. Hey, Bino. Phantom flag. Kind of an Alabama flag, if you will. Isn't that interesting?
I tell you, Tony, that kind of ineptitude is what raises speculation about some type of conspiracy out there. And the ACC was not going to get a team in the playoffs if North Carolina won. So that, you just spur that kind of thing, and you're exactly right on what can be reviewed. There should be a general duty clause like OSHA's got. If it's a play that could determine the outcome of a game, you should be able to review it. I don't care what it is.
So here these kids have played in a SEC champion, or an SEC. Here these kids have played in an ACC championship game. And you're going to sit there with a straight face and you're going to tell me you can't review that. When we cannot see, not only wasn't there an offsides, it wasn't even close.
No, it was not.
It wasn't even worth talking about. Let's go back to our phones. By the way, Smartway Dalton Behring, fifth quarter fan reaction, the place where you're the star. And let's get our next call in. I'm going to grab Sean Sinclair, who wants to join us as well, and give us his reaction. I do want to remind you, for our Periscope viewers, your appearance today, or is it my appearance on Periscope, whatever it is, my invasion of your world today, is presented by our friends at In the Paint, a TV show I'll be hosting, Fox 43, Tuesday night, 6:30, and quoting the great Freddie Miller all those years when he's talking about those shows in the Omni, be there!
Don't miss it, folks. It is fantastic entertainment. So we've moved from In the Pocket on Thursday nights to In the Paint on Tuesday nights, correct?
That, Beano, is...
Same time, 6:30, 43.
That's correct, Beano.
All right. Beautiful. I'll be there.
And I'm pretty proud of this. I've done some work for my viewers at home. I've taken this mandolin, which was very high off the fretboard, and I sanded this thing way down, and now it plays like an absolute champ. I mean, this thing is a $400 or so instrument. It plays like it's about $6,000 now. This thing rips. Can't wait to get it in somebody's hands that can really play. Let's go to our phones, Gary. Next call in. Hello and welcome.
It's the Pison.
Hey, brother. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Beano, how you doing, buddy?
I'm excellent tonight, Pison.
A couple things. I wonder what that over and under is going to be on that North Carolina Baylor game. It's going to probably be about 120, won't it?
Yeah, if Baylor's got a quarterback to play.
Yeah, that's going to be up there. And I'm glad my Wolfpack, you know, Mississippi State, that all be done. What bowl is that in, Tony?
You guys are going to the Belk Bowl.
Okay, that'll be, I don't know how Mississippi State will travel, but that'll be a pretty good game.
Mississippi State? Oh, they're none. They're notorious for being a fan base that spends money and really travels well with their football team. Probably to Temple levels. I would say that they are planning right now on where they're going to drop the curtain from in that stadium, Beano. Would you agree?
Well, I'm sure Mississippi State fans are going to be somewhat disappointed based on where they were at last year and where they go this year, but that is a good matchup. So maybe years of not being in bowl games will keep them happy enough to go. Yeah, no, Bill. They'll jump in the van and go down there and go back home.
And NC State's got a pretty good fan base, and Now, it's not necessarily close for them, but it's not far either.
Oh, no. You know, you're talking about a 2-hour drive for the State fans. But I'm glad State got in there, and I hope they kick Mississippi State's ass. But, hey, guys, on this, what do we know about Northwestern? I mean, I haven't even seen them play a game this year. And I remember last time we played them was Peyton was our quarterback, and we beat them pretty good. What do we know about them, Tony?
Cliff Notes, Python, they're good defensively. They're one-dimensional offensively. They can run the football, but they don't throw it well at all. And their special teams are average. But they'll be well-coached, and they'll be good defensively.
Python, what you eating there, brother?
Oh, nothing. I had a little ice in my mouth. How about you, Tony? You're my hero. I like, when I'm on there, I like to be eating something, you know?
pretty good, man. I resemble that remark.
Absolutely. But, guys, I'll tell you, at the end of the day, I think we'll spank Northwestern you know, going into next year, I think the expectations nationally are going to be high for us because, you know, I listen to during it overnight, Tony. I listen to a lot of national shows and stuff, and I'm telling you, I mean, there's not a lot of teams that want to play Tennessee right now.
Oh no! I'm telling you right now, if you'd put Michigan in a room and you'd have said to them, "Okay, I'm gonna give you a choice. You can either play Tennessee, Mississippi State, or Florida. Who do you want in that bowl game?" They said, "Give me Florida." That's going to rack up an easy win.
Absolutely.
Now they're going to take some punishment because Florida, I'll tell you this about Florida's defense. They'll knock your absolute you-know-what off and make you like it. And they did that yesterday to Alabama. I mean, they rock 'em, sock 'em, knocked Alabama around. But this Treon Harris, and look, I'm really appreciative of everything Butch Jones has done. I really am. How did they beat us with him at quarterback 2 years ago in Knoxville? How?
The only way you can explain it right now, Tony, is it's Florida against Tennessee.
He is effing terrible, with all apologies to effing, Bino. You ever seen a guy that bad at this level?
No, he's one of the worst-looking quarterbacks I've ever seen play college football.
They had a kid yesterday, 25 yards open. All he has to do is throw it to him.
Yeah.
And he throws it out in front of him. He can't hit anybody. Easy.
It looked like a fire drill out there. Florida's offense, I mean, he was going back and just throwing off his back foot. I mean, it was terrible. It was terrible. But we got to get that monkey off our back, guys. I mean, we got to beat these guys. That coach is a lot better than what I thought he was going to be. But,
pretty good.
You know, Butch has got to get this monkey off our back.
Thank you. Thank you, Paisan.
Take care, guys.
Thank you. Hey, Bino, I'm going to grab Docky Boy Sinclair here and get his thoughts and keep the good times rolling, brother. Give me a couple final thoughts here. As it's been announced, Tennessee, Northwestern, in the war to settle the score, Tampa, Florida, noon kickoff, be there New Year's Day.
Tony, it's been wonderful to be on our second consecutive bowl selection Sunday show. Sure beats the heck out of 3 years without. And this season may not be what it could have been, but at this point in our progression, we're playing on New Year's Day. We're playing a Big Ten team, and we've got a chance to end the season on a real good note. And I'm happy about all of that. And thanks, Tony. I've enjoyed it.
Bino, mucho gracias, brother. The great Bino has left the building, ladies and gentlemen. As I await Cinco, an opportunity for you to get in at 865-200-5402. Dr. Sinclair joins me generally on Wednesdays. Our program airs from 11 to 1, TonyBasilio.com, and we have a good time. If you haven't downloaded the app, do so. After each basketball game, we're live with you. After each Tennessee football game, we're live with you. And I want to thank my friends at Smartway, Dalton Behring and Hydraulics, and also Marcos Garza, Garza Law Firm, for presenting today's activity and today's action. If you want to get in with us, 865-200-5402. Tennessee gets ready to face Northwestern January 1 in Tampa, Florida. It's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Let's go back to our phones. On a day when Marcus Mariota had a breathtaking 87-yard run, the Titans snapped an 11-game home losing streak today to Briny Boy's Jacksonville Jaguars, 42-39. Well, at least you were entertained, Briny Boy. I'll give you that. Let's go back to the phones. Robinson, the kid from Penn State, put on an absolute show today in defeat for the Jags. As we will go back to our phones and grab Doc Sinclair. And if you want to get in, 865-200-5402, and we're wide open on the phone lines right now. So, and generally we do this until the phone calls end, and then we don't do this. Dr. Sinclair, say hello to our viewers around the world on Periscope watching us, and also our listeners at TonyBasilio.com around the world, including Eric, who's in Germany, as he called from Germany earlier. Doc, give me your thoughts, if you can, on the announcement, Tennessee Northwestern, January 1.
Well, Tony, I appreciate you having me. I don't believe I've ever been Periscoped, but I'm getting close to 50, so I guess that's going to be a regular deal for me. But anyway, I'm glad that the Outback Bowl against Northwestern, I think it's a great matchup for us. I think our strengths play into their weaknesses. I think their stats, defensive stats, were inflated because of the teams they played, meaning they played a lot of teams that lined up with two tight ends and tried to run it right down your throat. They didn't, and the teams that tried to spread you out, maybe Indiana, Purdue a little bit, they were just lesser teams. This is a team, Northwestern, I've seen a little bit of them. Just like you all said before, they want to keep everything in front of you on defense, in front of them on defense. They try to limit the big play. They don't want you to get behind them. And where the talent difference is going to be most evident is special teams. You saw Michigan took the opening kickoff back for a touchdown. They just, with their depth and their lack of athletic ability in that depth, I look for, and you have a nice track, hopefully, down there to run on. I think that Cam Sutton, Kamara, Evan Berry are going to have a field day.
It's so true. And, you know, Sink, in a way, I wanted the cachet of Michigan. But Fat Five Freddy brought up a pretty good point, which is you're playing a team with a lofty ranking, and you're sitting there right now in your Tennessee, and you're one of the big movers this week in the latest poll. And you'd have to think with a win with a bunch of teams that will lose in front of you, you would have to think Tennessee sets themselves up for a chance to have a final ranking of 13-14. That's not bad in your third year if you can get this game. That's not bad at all.
Well, no, if you really want to take a look at this from the outside, we're 8-4. It met expectations to some. To some, they may look at it what could have been. But last year, we were gifted a New Year's Day Florida game against an opponent that we can handle. This year, things have fallen our way. For whatever reason, we get another New Year's Day Florida game against a team that we should be able to handle. We're in the top 25. I know that things are, you know, Florida and Oklahoma, Alabama aside, I think if you look at those as building blocks instead of disappointments, I think that things are real positive. You take a look at what's going on around the conference with Kirby Smart, and you and I talked about this earlier today, that there's going to be another assistant coach carousel. It looks like Will Muschamp's going to take Traveris Robinson over to be his defensive coordinator. That takes away two of Auburn's guys. There's also hints that Lance Thompson, the Nomad, SEC Nomad, might go over there. And we know how Lance Thompson is away from Nick Saban. So you got Missouri, Kentucky,
He's bringing Kurt Roper with him as well.
Yeah, Kurt Roper, et cetera. And, you know, it's his, Kurt Roper's distance from Eli Manning and what Cutcliffe did at Duke. I mean, no one remembers any of that.
Here's the thing. It didn't work for them. It did not work for them at Florida. The last thing I would want if I was a South Carolina fan would be able to see him bring any semblance of what went on at Florida offensively when they were offensively bad.
Well, not only that, you know, at the beginning of the year, it was fashionable to start declaring Jim McElwain the greatest thing since Vince Lombardi, and I'm not cracking on him. I still think that he may have a little Terry Bowden syndrome going on right here, meaning that he's taking advantage of some talent left behind, because that defense is stacked. I think I saw where they may be losing 4 5-stars and 5 4-stars or something from that defense. But the point being, he can't recruit. Nobody can recruit like that at South Carolina. I don't care who you are. You can't get that kind of talent at South Carolina. He has never had an appreciation for offense. He's not going to recruit the kind of playmakers there. And the point being, with all this being said, is that whether we win a championship or not, that'll be up to the team, but we are sure in one of the most advantageous positions UT has been in a long time, including the year after Spurrier left, because the division is just gone downhill, in my opinion.
Well, Bino said it best. I mean, if you're a league-centric person and you love being the superiority of this league, let's Nick Saban leave the league. Let him walk out of here. And then you're going to see what this conference is. Hey, look, there is no doubt that he is great at what he does. He's a living legend. There's no doubt about that. I believe, and I could be wrong, but I believe he would leave for the Texas job if it opened tomorrow. I believe he would. I believe he regrets that. And I also believe, it's based on people I've talked to, and I also believe that there's a chance that he would scratch an NFL itch if the right one presented itself. Now, it would have to be a place that's got some talent. Maybe up there at Indianapolis with a fine young quarterback, because that's really what the NFL game's about right now. This league, when you look at these hires, you can't help but say, I don't know anything about the Odom guy. None of us do, okay? Them not having their head coach, Gary Pinkel, will diminish them. It will. It can't help but diminish them. Kirby Dumb at Georgia, you can mark my words. And I understand that they're having a little impasse behind the scenes, talking to a few folks that I respect and appreciate regarding his buyout. He wants more failure money than they're willing to pay him. What I would say to a guy like that is, all these ADs and presidents ought to start this. Let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me. I'm not giving you a damn dime to fail. If you're worried about your buyout, and we haven't walked you to the podium yet, I don't need you as my coach. I'll go get somebody else. Why don't these people do this? But I understand there's already an impasse there about that. What Muschamp, what's interesting, Cinco, based on the people I've talked to, Muschamp sold the people at Auburn, or at South Carolina, that he's different. That he's learned to dial it back, that he's going to run a more contemporary offense. Now, does the fact that he's bringing some pieces of his offense, including the brain trust with his offense from his Florida days, would that concern you if you were them? Would the fact, just the facts now, Ray Tanner, just the facts here, Sean, did you see him in that Alabama game last week?
Well, that's not the only time he's blown up, but I'll tell you what happened with South Carolina is they did everything perfectly throughout the year, except they failed to realize what position they really are, meaning they thought they were going to walk in and grab Kirby Smart or Tom Herman. They thought they were going to, and then they realized they were shown who they really are in the SEC. And then what happened was Ray Tanner fell to the same reason that Mike Hamilton fell to Lane Kiffin, meaning Mike Hamilton was mesmerized by the fact that Lane Kiffin was going to surround himself with recruiters and stuff like that because they desperately need talent instead of going out and finding a solid coach. Because he thought he had to get the cupboard stocked up quickly. And I think it's just going to be a big disaster. Now here's back to Nick Saban, if you allow me a little thing. I think he's gone regardless. And I'll tell you why. A couple of things. One, he's approaching 70. Okay. He may not look it. But he's getting up there. What else does he have to prove? He will never be Bear Bryant at Alabama, no matter how many championships he brings in there. If he wins it, he goes out on a high. If he loses it, that'll be 2 years in a row of frustration for the Alabama people. I believe that, one, he goes to somewhere like Texas if that's open, or two, he takes care of the one itch that he hasn't been able to scratch, and that's the NFL. And that'll put him, whether he succeeds or fails, that'll put him into retirement. And so I just, he has not looked happy as far as Nick Saban goes to me the past couple years. I think the nonsense with all these coaches turning over, the nonsense with the Jonathan Taylor deal with the domestic violence, the nonsense with Lane Kiffin, I think he's over it. And I think the expectations in Tuscaloosa are just unrealistic for anybody.
He told a guy that I know semi-well, I'm the only guy in the country has to worry about 105 kids and his offensive coordinator on any given Saturday night. which is really just a beautiful, beautiful line. And on the way out, Cinco, because we have no calls, and it's been great talking
with
you.
Apparently, I'm the show killer.
No. We didn't have any calls before you stepped on. In fact, I said that. And my deal is I go till the calls end, and I'm not here to talk. We're certainly not here to talk to ourselves, though we have several people listening on the app. But that said,
hey, before you go, let's throw out the thing with Miami and Rick we were talking about. I don't believe you've talked about that.
Go ahead.
Well, you and I were talking, and there is some talk out there, and we talked on Friday, filling in for Keith Hatfield. I had Anthony Dasher from UGASports.com of the Rivals platform. I asked him about, how we're not so enamored with Jancic and Martinez, and what was it like when they were let go from Rick? When I asked him, were they released because of their merits or lack thereof? And he said point blank they were let go because of they were scapegoats from unrealized expectations of the team and maybe the defense. And so he said that he confirmed that he and Rick and Martinez are great friends. And there's some word leaking out that he will reach to both these guys because maybe in Rick's mind, now that he's out of Georgia, he wants to right a wrong that he perceives was made to those guys. And I think that we've talked about it before. No offense to those two, but I think those are weak links if we're trying to reach championship-level football. And Butch Jones may have an opportunity to upgrade his staff tremendously.
You know what's really interesting is that, and I think Zach Azani's another guy that's kind of worn it out. What's interesting is the coaching profession's so bizarre right now that I'm looking at Willie Martinez and I'm thinking, I don't know if there's somebody over there that's done less with more than he has, outside of maybe Azani. And those guys are hot properties for some reason. Will Muschamp was not going to be welcome back at Auburn because he's so damn crazy. And he got a head coaching job after failing miserably at Florida in the division that he's going to try and win in, where he had more to work with at Florida. What a cockeyed profession. That is a strange profession.
Well, I think that goes back 30 years or so when we saw people that what you see now is, in my opinion, you see these specialists, and typically it's offensive specialists. The new guys are Lincoln Riley or Herman or whatever, okay? And they come in there. Someone, perfect example, offensive guy, he brings in Chief. He's going to pay him almost $2 million and turn that side of the ball over to him. Malzahn, I'm going to pay you 1.8, whatever, turn that side over. Well, in that thing, you set up a little kingdom for those guys. They're heads of that deal. And it just doesn't work like that in a organization. You got to have one boss, not two. And I think some of these teams are being short-sighted. I'm no big fan of Dave Hart. I think he lucked into Butch Jones, but he went out and found a guy who won up the ladder. The John Beilein approach in basketball, some of these other things. Where everyone else is trying to, we fell prey to it with Derek Dooley. We want to go and get the handsome, young, kicky offensive guy that puts points on the board. A lot of times that doesn't work. So who knows? I think it plays well into Tennessee's hand right now. Now, we'll see what happens with the recruiting because these other guys get a big bump. They throw the hot sauce on them. South Carolina will throw the hot sauce. Kirby Smart will throw the hot sauce down in Georgia. I'm not sure what's going to go on in Auburn. They've kind of run their course, I guess. But I have a feeling Tennessee's going to be the beneficiary of being a solid, stable, known commodity to some big-time recruits.
And if we can't succeed in this conference and in this division in the next couple of years, we might as well just forget about it.
Well, I don't know what success is. I think the all you can, you know, I remember back in the day, and because of division, the way it would, you'd extrapolate it is you'd say, hey, our first goal is to win the East. Our second goal is to win the SEC championship. If we can win the SEC championship, then we will be in contention for the national championship. You don't have to play 100 teams in the country. You got to take care of the East, which gets you in the game. You got to play the SEC championship game, which puts you in contention for now the playoff. And for what I will not apologize for any weak Eastern division to give us an advantage to get to the championship game, because
no.
For years it was Tennessee, Georgia, and Florida, and the West was terrible.
Walk through it, though. It's time to walk through it. It is time to walk through it. Back to the phones. 865-200-5402. Thank you for being there to our next caller. Hello and welcome.
Hey, Tony. How you doing, brother?
Doing great. Thank you.
Hi, this is Greg down in Middle Tennessee.
Good to talk to you, Greg.
Got a question. I was wondering in reference to these coaching changes. I want to echo the last guy who was talking in reference to Tennessee building its program and reputation a little bit stronger than these guys that are coming in, these schools that are letting these guys go that had great records, like Mark Richt down in Georgia. I don't understand that. But anyway, I think Tennessee will continue to grow its commodity. But there's a big question still left there. If you got the guys that are in the back offices at UT, this cheat guy, he probably needs to find a new job. He's making the university look stupid, and you got parents of these kids that are looking at your school, and they're hearing this idiotic stuff coming out of the guys in UT, you know, makes them think, well, do I want my kid to go there?
You know, that Office for Diversity is idiotic, first of all. What that has to do with educating somebody, I'm not quite sure. For some reason, we were able to get by, and I was able to get a pretty good education at the University of Tennessee without the input of the Office of Diversity in my life. I'll tell you this, talking to some people the last couple of days, and I had Congressman John Duncan on my show on Friday. I think Jimmy Cheek's days, as they currently sit, are numbered. And I believe that when you saw him issue that statement the other day, and I'm not speaking out of turn here, I saw a show on Channel 10 here locally this morning with Susan Richardson Williams, who's a longtime political operative here in town and has her own PR firm, pretty sharp lady. She said that any time you see sitting elected officials taking on a chancellor at a huge university like the University of Tennessee, calling for his head openly, these are the people that fund or that they rely on for funding of the university. If you'll notice, and you gotta notice this now, a statement was put out by Waldo DiPietro. Because he is like, where's Waldo? You couldn't find him with a search warrant. I don't even know what the guy looks like. But there was because he was dancing around in a video a couple years ago. I do remember what he looks like. But there was a statement put out by Waldo. And to call the level of support in that tepid would be really pushing it. I believe that Jimmy Cheek, as we speak tonight, needs to freshen up his resume. I think he's in trouble. And this will have sports ramifications because Jimmy Cheek is weak. And the reason Jimmy Cheek is weak is that Jimmy Cheek allowed this $250,000 diversity head to push this nonsense in the Bible Belt in Knoxville, Tennessee, where it is not the value, it's not the values of the people of the state. It's not. In fact, it's not even close. And Jimmy Cheek, though, is a worm, and he's weak, and he allowed Susan Martin to run roughshod over the athletic program till Dave Hart got there and said, that ain't happening anymore. But Dave Hart is peacocking around and wants an extension, and they need to run Dave Hart for the field, for the Tyndall fiasco, for some of the other things that he's done. He needs
Lady Vols.
The Lady Vols. He needs to go. Dave Hart needs, and he doesn't need an extension. The field. I mean, are you freaking kidding me? You're going to give that guy an extension? He's got balls, man. He wants an extension? He wants an extension. Lottie freaking Dottie, Bammer Dave. Jimmy Cheek is not a leader. And I think that they're circling the wagons on him. To our friend in the mid-state, Greg, I think they're going to get him. That's my read of the tea leaves.
Well, you know where this PC crap gets you, and I'm tired of it. You know, to tell somebody, when you have a Christmas party, let's not make it so Christmassy or whatever he said.
Yeah, Tennessee's not alone, though. Michigan's doing it. I saw an article the other day. Ohio State's doing it. Michigan's doing it. What's shocking about it is that it would happen here. That's what's shocking about it. But all these colleges are being given into this, what I like to call thought fascism. They're open-minded as long as it's going their way. They don't want to hear any other opinions. It's bizarre. Really is.
Well, I'm proud for the Vols going to the bowl game. I don't know if you saw it, where Georgia's going to the game. Last year, the Tax Slayer Bowl against Penn State. Looks like.
Great game for Georgia. Mark Rick can go out a winner.
Hey, I really...
I don't think he's going to coach, Tony.
Oh, he goes out a loser.
I've watched you some on Periscope, too. That's pretty cool, isn't it?
Pretty ugly, aren't I?
You know, you try to put a voice with a face, and it didn't match.
Thank you, Greg.
I'm kidding with you.
Take care, brother. You have a good one.
See you, brother.
Vol Colonel says Tennessee's opened as a 7-point favorite, according to Five Dimes, Cinco over Northwestern. 7-point favorite.
Well, I'll tell you what, this is for what people have kind of, you know, not really liked about our offense. This offense is going to give Northwestern trouble because the more you can spread them out with wide receivers, flare passes, et cetera, the more you expose their lack of athletic ability. When you compact things with tight running, et cetera, that plays right into their deal. And they will have no answer if Josh Dobbs gets on the loose. That'll be a death knell for them.
And with him rested, Cinco and Hurd rested, and these guys just, you know, taking a month off, Tennessee's liable to rush for 350, 400 yards in that game if Dobbs is able to get outside. Big chunks, chunk plays.
Yeah, and he won't have to. Again, with spreading them out, I think you're going to see guys like John Johnson, if he's healthy, Josh Smith, et cetera. I think they'll just be wide open, you know, on the outside middle of the field. I mean, what I'm trying to say, second layer passing on the sidelines. I think there'll be kids running all day.
And it's going to be a nice showcase. It's going to be like kind of like last year, the Iowa game. It's going to be a real showcase for the Vols.
Well, it really is. I mean, you're going to have, and I know that people say this doesn't matter. It does. I mean, you're going to have color. You're going to have orange. You're going to have the purple. I mean, that's why Michigan has been so popular. It's just that the diametrically opposing blue and yellow, that matters to kids. It's in their face again. It's going to be pretty weather, you'd like to think. An offensive deal. It's just going to keep building on the narrative that Butch Jones has been trying to create around here. And then if we can, you know, if somehow, and I don't know who these guys are, but if somehow you could get a Terry Fair back, if somehow you could get a defensive coordinator that, you know, is not so giving on fourth down, if you can get a wide receiver coach that's that can get the most out of our receivers while yet, you know, the kids like them and being good recruiters, and then you can go ahead and get a big-time quarterback coach, I think it plays well for our future.
Just as long, Sean, as we can get a guy that starts the receivers in the crouching dragon position. I'm going to really miss that.
Crouching receiver, hidden passing game. Absolutely.
And as you said last week, which is one of my favorite lines, how, say it about the injuries on the wide receiving corps. It's a great line.
I don't see how you got guys that are 6'4", 200 plus pounds, that the leading guy has barely 400 yards receiving for the year. They don't block anybody on running. I don't get it. How are they so banged up? And with their 500 receiver rotation, they're not playing much. I just don't see how these guys are all torn to pieces. It doesn't make sense.
Cinco, tell the living listener where they can find you, and I appreciate your time, brother. Thank you.
Hey, Tony, thanks again for having me. It's a pleasure to always be part of this radio family. If you're out in Blount County, we serve people in Knox County. We've been in business for about 10, 11, 12 years on my own. We're proud of what we do. We've got a great staff. We like to treat people as we'd like to be treated, and we think we're pretty good at what we do. If you're insurance change, looking for a second opinion, maybe you've just, grown tired of where you are, give us a call at 681-3004. That's Sean Sinclair, SEANDDS.com, and we'll be glad to help you out.
Cinco, love you like a brother, brother.
Thank you, Tony. Go Vols, brick by brick. Let's go get some Northwestern Wildcat.
Thank you, brother. Wildcat. It's the other white meat, isn't it? I want to thank Dr. Sinclair. I want to thank Bino. I'd like to really thank Jerry Colquitt for his absence today and for Russell Smith for not bringing me the cold into my house. I want to thank the living listener for spreading the word on Twitter. All the well wishes, all the greetings. I want to thank the Vol Colonel. I want to thank Orange Throat. X. Me for being a ham. Congratulations to the volunteers. New Year's Day is the destiny. Listener watch party at Cassie's. Tomorrow I'm back live with you from 11 to 1. Tuesday night on television with Donnie Tindall. Until we meet again, for all those behind the scenes that make this possible, from the Raymere studio in Knoxville, Tony Basilio wishing you a good night and a Go Volunteers. You hear that unmistakable beat, ladies and gentlemen, that unmistakable sound, and you know that's the late, great Waylon Jennings. That's something from 84. As joining us now on the program, Michael Streisguth, author of Outlaw, Waylon, Willie, Chris, and the Renegades of Nashville. Michael, first of all, I want to thank you for joining me, and we came in there with a little bit of Waylon Jennings live, and Waylon's sound, it's so rock and roll. It's so accessible to so many folks, isn't it?
Well, it is, and I think that's part of his great appeal. And his drummer, Richie Albright, called that sound a cast-off of the Buddy Holly rhythm, and Waylon, of course, worked with Buddy Holly back in the 1950s, and he really began to thrive in the 70s when he let that rock and roll flow freely through his music, and that's the Waylon that we know today. Thanks for having me. It's a great pleasure.
Oh, listen, it's wonderful spending a few minutes with you. In fact, I've got to tell you, I want to congratulate you on your work. I couldn't put it down. You know, I read it. I had a trip that I took across the country, and I brought the book with me. And it's funny, you read a book like this, and there are a lot of people out there who love that style of music, love that kind of music, that era, that period. And there's something timeless about it, isn't there?
Well, there is. You know, I think that it's, that attitude never gets old. I mean, people like a little bit of cussedness in their music. Of course, as you say, that the music has never died. That outlaw sound, that outlaw music that was so strong in the 1970s. To me, it sounds fresh. It sounds like it was made yesterday. There's just nothing dated about it. And a lot of the new guys in country, I'm thinking about Jamie Johnson and folks like that, Zach Brown. I mean, they're in my mind, they're reaching for that Waylon sound and that Willie Nelson sound.
Yeah, but I don't, you know, and I'm not going to pick on new country. Certainly there's different schools. I don't know if those guys find it, because you know, it's almost as if these guys happened upon it organically. And your book talks a lot about that. Willie had some false starts to his career. Waylon had some records that just did miserably, though he had great promise. And those guys almost found themselves through the back door, didn't they, in the industry?
They did. And, you know, it was also, though, an industry that would be patient with artists. In other words, the whole 1960s, when Waylon Jennings and Willie Nelson are trying to find themselves, are trying to get their footing, they were on RCA Records. They were on a major label. And even though they weren't selling millions, the label kept them around. They didn't quite know what to do with the label. The label didn't quite know what to do with Waylon and Willie. And it wasn't until they had the time to start recording the music the way they wanted to record it. I think that sound, that timeless sound that we're talking about, emerged. And that's when, of course, they started selling millions of records. And, you know, to his credit, a former record executive said, you know, sometimes the executives really don't know the best next thing for an artist, but you got to let the artist take the lead. And when that began to happen for Waylon and Willie, that's when their careers took off.
Michael Streisguth is our guest today on the program as we talk today about his work, Outlaw, Waylon, Willie, Chris, and the Renegades of Nashville. And, you know, Michael, you've also written extensively about Johnny Cash. You've done stuff about the country scene at large, and you've done a ton of things. So let me ask you this. As you sat down and you started to work on this project, give me a couple things that you learned that you thought were really interesting that you learned while putting this together.
Well, you know, I think the big thing for me was really getting to know Waylon's music a lot better. I mean, I certainly have always been aware of Waylon's career and his hits, and you know, to me, getting into the nuances of Waylon's music, giving it a harder listen, trying to understand it better, just gave me so much greater appreciation for what he was doing. I mean, with Waylon, so much of it was the image. You know, he was the swaggering outlaw guy who really seemed like he might be an outlaw. The long shaggy hair, of course the arrest for cocaine in 1977. But he was really a sensitive, you know, on the ball musician, who really, I think, pushed out the barriers in country music. So that was huge. And I gotta tell you, it was the movie Crazy Heart with Jeff Bridges that inspired me to write the book. I mean, to me, Jeff Bridges seemed so much like Waylon Jennings in that film. And Waylon, by the time that film had come out, I mean, Waylon had passed maybe 7 or 8 years before. And I was thinking to myself, you know, Waylon is fading somewhat from the national consciousness. It's not like Johnny Cash, who's bigger today than he was when he was alive. And so I began to pursue a Waylon Jennings biography, and that's how it kind of spread out. It opened up into this whole outlaw story. So that was instructive for me. And I have to say, as far as other surprises, the fact, and this gets us over to Chris Christopherson, who really helped revolutionize songwriting in Nashville. Bob Dylan came to Nashville to record in the mid-1960s, mm-hmm. and Chris Christopherson had arrived just out of the Army, and Christopherson was pushing a broom in the studios of Columbia Records. He was making, you know, a few bucks an hour as a janitor, and Christopherson is in the studio working when Dylan comes to Nashville to do his first album, Blonde on Blonde. And it just, what a great moment. You got this guy, Christopherson, who actually brings kind of a Dylan vibe to the recording scene, to the songwriting scene in Nashville, actually there when Bob Dylan comes to Nashville for the first time to record. I thought that was very interesting.
I did as well. Another thing I thought was really interesting as well about the book was how it was set in Nashville, but these guys all sort of came to fruition and struggled and paid their dues at a time of, as we know in our country, great unrest. But even at a time where down there in West End, the bohemian scene, a lot of the things that were going on, you really paint the picture there of a culture that helped grow these guys in a lot of ways, into the musicians and to some degree the poets and the artists that they became. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you point that out, because I don't think Nashville gets credit for being an incubator that nurtures talent. I mean, it seems to be painted as the industry town that kind of turns artists into stars. And while that's true to some extent, there was this great scene, as you point out, in the West End that began to emerge in the late 1960s, and it had everything, for example, that Greenwich Village had in New York. A university, Vanderbilt, a big park, Centennial, where people could hang out and play music, cheap rents, diners, clubs, you name it. And so this bohemian atmosphere rises up, and so many people, young people, were flocking to that scene. I mean, these were students at Vanderbilt, but also young songwriters and musicians who had heard that Dylan recorded in Nashville, that Neil Young recorded in Nashville, that the Johnny Cash show, which many people were sitting home and watching on ABC, was staged and produced in Nashville at the Ryman Auditorium, that all these bluegrass bands that were showing up at universities all across the country in the 1960s, as kind of part and parcel of the folk revival, were based in Nashville. So there was this aura really about Nashville. It was every bit as creative as Greenwich Village or the Haight-Ashbury district in San Francisco. And you're right, there is